Welcome to the WBGO Journal. I'm Doug Doyle. Today, the protests that have escalated this week at Delaney Hall have brought a national spotlight to Newark.
I was trying to do my best to de-escalate this. I put myself between the ICE agents and the protesters.
Governor Mike Shero has put guardrails in place on the fast-growing AI data center industry as concerns mount over electricity costs, water usage, and transparency.
There are real concerns about their impact on our energy bills, our water supply, our quality of life.
WBGO's John Kalish takes us to Skyview Acres in Rockland County, New York, a racially integrated community that was created after World War II.
Jeremy Wall says Skyview has a collective identity.
And I'll chat with CEO and co-founder of Fanzo, Leo McLehose, about the upcoming FIFA World Cup matches in New Jersey. All this coming up today on the WBGO Journal. Protesting outside the Delaney Hall Detention Center in Newark continues to escalate and is prompting reaction from federal officials to area politicians. Acting U.S. Attorney General Todd Blanche said a protester who shouted death threats at an ICE officer at Delaney Hall will face federal charges once they find him. Blanche gave his reaction to what's been happening this week during an interview with Fox News.
That's a federal crime, and not only threatening the ICE officer, but think about how disgusting this individual is, threatening his family and his children with death. What is this man doing? He's just doing his job standing there. And so that is disgusting, that what you just showed, and we see his face, and I promise you, we will find him. And when we find him, we will arrest him, because it is a crime not only to threaten law enforcement, but not surprisingly, to threaten their family as well. That is not peaceful protesting. That is not protesting that's allowed under our Constitution, which everybody is perfectly fine with people doing. And how we stop what you just saw, which is violence and crimes being committed, is we have to have law enforcement. Remember, we're doing this with virtually no support from local law enforcement in New Jersey. So the way that we stop it is by making arrests where appropriate, which is exactly what we will do.
The violence started during protests on Memorial Day, when New Jersey U.S. Senator Andy Kim and others were pepper sprayed. Concerns about the treatment of detainees were at the heart of the protests. Senator Kim spoke out this week as well.
I came out of the detention center and immediately saw that there was a very precarious and tense standoff, you know, where you had a line of armed ICE agents, an armored vehicle. You had a line of protesters there. And I was trying to do my best to de-escalate this. I put myself between the ICE agents and the protesters. At some point, ICE officials said they're just going to push this convoy of vehicles through the crowd. And I told them, you cannot just plow your way through a crowd of civilians. I tried to stop it, tried to find an arrangement, but they continued on. So I put myself again between the agents and the crowd. And that's when they started shooting pepper balls at our feet, as well as, you know, right past me, seeing the pepper spray. I did my best to try to keep people safe, to try to de-escalate and keep the crowd and the agents separate. But, you know, myself and a number of others certainly got irritation in our eyes. My throat was burning. It was something that was really painful to watch.
Both New Jersey Governor Mike Shero and New Jersey U.S. Senator Cory Booker have called for Delaney Hall to be shut down. On Thursday night, New Jersey Attorney General Jennifer Davenport stressed the importance of protesting peacefully and said violence will not be tolerated. Backlash over artificial intelligence data centers has intensified across New Jersey, especially in Kenilworth and surrounding Union County towns, where residents and local officials are raising concerns about utility costs, environmental impacts, noise, and whether communities are being properly informed before projects move forward. In response, Governor Mike Shero is moving to place guardrails on the AI data center industry. The governor made the announcement this past Wednesday at the State House in Trenton.
So today I want to talk about something that's on a lot of people's minds, data centers. Warehouses full of servers that process the massive amounts of information needed to power the internet and advanced computing, supporting everything from cancer research to your checking account to your streaming service. We have over 80 facilities right here in New Jersey. They've created over 100,000 construction jobs, boosting tax revenue, and feeding our innovation economy. But today, AI is driving an explosion in the construction of even bigger centers nationwide. There are real concerns about their impact on our energy bills, our water supply, our quality of life. And there are worries that growth is happening without transparency or concern for our communities. I know for a lot of people, things can feel out of control, like it's the Wild West, like it's happening in the dark. I hear you, and we've got your back, and I have a plan. Our grid operator, PJM, has said that data centers were responsible for 70% of the projected increase in demand last year. The Department of Energy says they'll account for over 10% of all power consumed in America by 2030. So today I'm stepping up to establish clear guardrails for data centers in New Jersey. It's a four-part plan to make data centers pay their fair share by bringing their own energy to the table, to make sure they operate transparently, add value to the grid and to our communities, and support good-paying jobs long-term. For years, smaller data centers have been scattered in office parks across our state. Each needed maybe a megawatt of energy to operate, and they'd connect to the grid to get it. But today's data centers sometimes use 300 megawatts, enough to power entire towns. That skyrocketing demand is outpacing supply and jacking up all of our electric bills. Not on my watch, not on your backs. As a first step, my administration is working with the legislature to establish a set of rules to protect average ratepayers by demanding that data centers pay their own way. We're going to require them to bring their energy to the grid, contracting with their own power generators and paying for the grid upgrades needed to handle the larger load. Instead of asking New Jerseyans to subsidize big tech, we're asking big tech to improve our grid, making it more efficient and reliable, and lowering costs for everyone.
State officials describe the proposal as the first comprehensive strategy in the nation focused specifically on regulating data centers. They said they want to balance the economic opportunities tied to the AI industry while also putting oversight measures in place. Last week, we told you about Edmund Gordon, the 104-year-old psychologist who has had a profound effect on minority education. Gordon lives in a cooperative community in Rockland County, New York, known as Skyview Acres. Created after World War II as a racially integrated community, Skyview has been home to a number of prominent political activists and pioneering medical professionals. WBGO's John Kalish recently visited Skyview and has this report.
Every year, there's a gathering to celebrate the end of winter at Skyview. Residents turn out for a potluck dinner and talent show at an event known as the Winter Doldrums Party. The piano player Jeremy Wall accompanied many of the acts performing at the Winter Doldrums Party. Wall co-founded the Grammy-nominated jazz fusion group Spyro Gyra. Another co-founder, saxophonist Jay Bekenstein, also lives at Skyview. Jeremy Wall says Skyview has a collective identity.
It started with the people who started Skyview 80 years ago, and these were left-wing Quaker individuals from New York City who wanted to start an intentional community up here in the boondocks. The very radical idea behind the community that was very controversial, that it was, oh my God, multiracial.
Among Skyview's prominent residents were the civil rights lawyer Conrad Lynn, the pioneering black psychiatrist Margaret Lawrence, and George Hauser, co-founder of both the Congress of Racial Equality and the American Committee on Africa. Carol Bowman is a professor of education at Ramapo College.
The kind of upbringing that I had is pretty much unique in terms of the education that I got just from the adult members of the community. One felt like they had many parents.
The youth of Skyview Acres inherited their parents' political sympathies when Martin Luther King Jr.'s Poor People's Campaign set up a tent city called Resurrection City in Washington, D.C. Skyview's rebellious teenagers created Insurrection City in the woods near their homes. Carol Bowman liberated chicken from the family fridge and cooked for the encampment. The tradition of dissent started early for Skyview kids.
When I was in elementary school, I didn't salute the flag. And when we had those drills, duck and cover, most of the Skyview kids came with notes from their parents said that they were not allowed to participate in that.
A stream feeds the man-made pond at Skyview, which is the center of community life. The pond was dug by the original residents, who also cleared trees to build homes and roads. Every year, the pond, which is chlorinated for swimming, is drained and then refilled in the spring. The pond has been turned into a public beach with sand, plastic chairs, a volleyball net, and changing rooms. On Friday nights, there are music events here. I visited the pond with Jacob and Rachel Goldstein, 40-something twins who grew up in Skyview and now live in Vermont. They told me that growing up here was a blessing.
It felt like we had a really big family, people that inspire and challenge and that are so plugged in and engaged with whatever it is that their passions are, but everyone coming together to help make this special for each other, and you just don't quite get this anywhere.
My hope is that Skyview inspires other communities to really come together and see a way to live that it doesn't have to be communal living in a sense of all shared property. You don't have to be defined by these rules and structures. You can have a community that's community-oriented with still a bit of autonomy for individuality. I hope that this kind of inspires other communities to rethink how they interact with each other.
The Skyview Acres Cooperative is not like a traditional co-op or condo. Skyview's board of directors manages the pond and a former ball field. The board also coordinates the Winter Doldrums Party and the Friday Night Music Series. Skyview residents are aware of the booming population of nearby ultra-Orthodox Jewish communities and the pressure that puts on land development in Rockland County. The town of Ramapo bought a 76-acre parcel of undeveloped land bordering Skyview. Anna Friedberg is president of the Skyview Board.
We're still hoping to work with the town on that larger property to make sure that it doesn't get developed to the extent in which it would both impact traffic flow, impact sort of the watershed that comes into Skyview, while understanding that there is a tremendous population boom in this area, and so there's significant pressure to find more housing for folks.
The town of Ramapo is currently studying how to develop the property. A comprehensive plan released by the town in 2019 recommended that the land be used for a park or a religious campus. For the WBGO Journal, I'm John Kalish.
Buzz over the 2026 FIFA World Cup continues, with 8 matches set to be played at MetLife Stadium in New Jersey, including the championship match in July. Leo McLehose will be at the final match. He's the CEO and co-founder of Fanzo, a sports venue digital platform that is now available in North America. Fanzo brings fans together to create unforgettable memories at the best sports bars and venues around the world. Fanzo's technology links brands, rights holders, broadcasters, and fans with commercial venues. I recently spoke with Leo McLehose about his thoughts on what we should expect in the World Cup. You and your business partner, Don Collingwood, started Fanzo in 2012. Tell us how it actually works.
Yeah, so Fanzo is... Fanzo is a platform that helps sports fans find great venues where they can watch any sports event that they want to watch, right? You're in Melbourne, you're in Australia, want to watch the Super Bowl. It tells you which bars around you are showing which game, and you can book tables and invite your friends. And that's kind of what we do for sports fans. I guess the business has two sides to it. One, you might call a little bit like the Open Table or the Resi for sports bars. So we have about 50,000 venues globally who use our platform. So when I say venues, I mean bars, restaurants, fan zones, who use our platform to organize, market, and measure all their sports content, right? So you're a bar in Atlanta or you're a bar in Dallas, sport is a really expensive asset. All of these subscriptions you need to get, DirecTVs, the Verizons, the Everpasses, the Johan Promotions of this world. We provide all of the tools around that to help bars and restaurants and venues organize all that sports content, know which games they're going to show, kind of optimize that sports schedule, and then make sure that it goes to every place that matters. Make sure all your staff know which games you're showing, what channels they're on, and then help you with all the marketing, right? So make sure that we power your website so that on your website is all the games you're going to be showing. Make sure we power your social media so that on your Instagram, your Facebook, your Twitter, there's all of your updated number of events, because at the end of the day, you're trying to bring patrons back into your venue, and then also help you measure and understand, you know, how you're in venue screens, but understand what games are working and what games aren't. Try and recruit those kind of local fan clubs, do some watch parties and the like. And then the second part of our business is really about activating this out-of-home sports fan audience. There are three places you can watch sport, right? The stadium, incredible in terms of experience and in terms of kind of optimizing the value of that sports fan. You know, you're selling them tickets, you've got their data, you've selling them merchandise, you're selling them food, drink, great. But, you know, you can only fit 70,000 fans into the MetLife for the World Cup final in July. And they have to be in New York. Whereas the home is great in terms of scale. You know, Formula One, I had a meeting with not long ago, and they were talking to me about the fact that they have, you know, 1 billion fans, but they don't have much more than 1% of those fans in their CRM. Great reach in terms of television at home, but not really that kind of value and depth of the relationship. There's this third space, everyone who's in pubs, bars, fan zones around the world who are having an incredibly strong experience of watching those sports events, but no one has any data on these people and no one has real means of engaging that fan base. And that's really what Fanzo is doing in that second bit, is we help the likes of Anheuser-Busch, Michelob Ultra, Guinness, et cetera, kind of activate their sponsorships of the Premier League, of the World Cup, of World Rugby, of World Cups, of Six Nations. That's kind of what we're doing for brands and rights holders.
You're right when it comes to, if you can go to a venue and you can have fans who are rooting against you, who are rooting with you, it makes an incredible experience. And friendships can actually develop from these experiences as well. I'm sure a lot of the people that you have dealt with have said, you know, people become lifelong friends because they go to the same place to watch their team all the time.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I really do believe that sport is a vehicle via which we create these social connections. I've often thought to myself this question of, you know, why do we get so attached to sport, right? Why do we think it, breathe it, think about it all the time? And I think it is really a sense of belonging. People want that sense of belonging, and, you know, what better than to be, you know, an Eagles fan or a Manchester United fan and go through the highs and the lows. And it's just as powerful to feel those moments of pure joy and ecstasy as it is to have those shared moments of misery.
With the World Cup coming into play, as I mentioned, it's a perfect time for Fanzo to be here in North America. But global is part of the sports landscape completely. I mean, we have players like Wemby in the NBA who are dominating, and some of the greatest NBA players, you know, are not from the United States, obviously. And of course, with soccer, and as you refer to it, obviously it's football, right? We know that the greatest teams on the men's side, at least, are certainly not from the United States. And we see this influx of great players from all these other countries coming into the sport. And we see the NFL branching out to Germany and to other spots. I think we've all finally realized we're all in this together, right?
Yeah, it's a great point, Doug. I think sport is really truly a global language. I was reminded of going to the 2018 World Cup. I've been to a lot of these tournaments, and I'm just, the number of fans, Peruvian fans who were in Russia, who were having an amazing time, and there are so many differences we like to talk about in terms of people and particularly in this day and age, but I think that that concept of global fandom is so it's the same for so many people. I love to see the way that fans have a relationship with their team in Brazil or their team in Australia or across all of these different codes and these different sports. And it's this, yeah, there's a very shared passion there that we can all engage with. So yes, absolutely on the fan side and obviously on the player side, yes, this is going to be a great festival of football. And I'm really looking forward to seeing how the US hosts this big global event.
There's going to be some amazing venues, especially in the Ironbound section of Newark, when it comes to the World Cup, famous for their wonderful restaurants, and Portugal has a good chance. But who do you think's going to win the World Cup this year?
Doug, it's a very simple answer. It's my hometown. It's France. We have been in four of the last seven World Cup finals, and we've won two of them. And we are coming to this tournament with one of the great teams. Now, I say that out of both hope and light expectation, but there are so many good teams coming to this tournament. I think Spain have got a great chance. I think England probably have a good chance. And then Argentina just won the last World Cup, and you can never count out the likes of Brazil. I don't think the USA is going to win this World Cup, but yeah, never say never.
What is it about the French when it comes to football being one of the top areas? What is it? I mean, you're half French. You have that relationship. What is it about France?
Ooh, I've had many conversations on this topic with some of my friends. I actually think there's something about this concept of nationalism that there are certain countries that you see, like New Zealand, when it comes to rugby, who have a population. I'm going to get this wrong, but I think it's less than 9 million. Might even be 4.5. Tiny country, yet an absolute powerhouse on the world rugby stage. And what is that about? I think it's about a national identity. It's about real passion. When it gets really tough in a game, do you really care? Are you going to put yourself on the line? Mbappe, one of the best football players in the France team, captain, said something really beautiful just before the 2018 World Cup. I think he was 19 or 20, and it was his first World Cup. And he said, "It's all great playing for your club. Yeah, it's great. You have so many fans, whatever. When you play for your country, you have a chance to put a smile on everyone's face. If we win the World Cup, the next day, the pastry chef going into work at 4 a.m., is going to wake up and they're going to be walking to the office and they're going to have a big smile. Not even if they're not a football fan, but their country, you know, won the Football World Cup." And I think it's that kind of energy that makes me feel like that's the foundations of why France does so well.
In for Kylian Mbappe now. Mbappe! And this is a solo effort from Mbappe. Just watch, creates a little bit of space, it comes back the other way. Learn the name, know the face. This is your next global superstar right here. Kylian Mbappe, 19 years old. And he has scored in a World Cup final.
You have an outside perspective, so I have to ask you, what do other countries think about U.S. when it comes to football, soccer?
Listen,
you can be honest, Leo.
Doug, you can see me calculating an answer here. Listen, Doug, the US has a lot of sports. It has American football, it has the NBA, it has baseball. Is soccer the most important sport in the US? No. Is it the fastest growing sport in the US? Yes. And I think this World Cup has an opportunity to be a real catalyst and light the fire, and for fans, you know, who weren't around the last time the US were hosting these kind of tournaments, that could really see the passion that's associated with this and might end up driving real interest, further interest that will go and grow the grassroots level of soccer in the US and get more players playing. A lot of the Hispanic contingent in the US who absolutely love soccer, and maybe this time in 4 years, in 8 years, in 12 years, really start competing. But as we said, Doug, anything can happen. They could go far in this tournament.
Speaking of going far, how far can Fanzo go? I mean, what would you be satisfied and said, yes, I've accomplished my goal?
Every sports fan in the world, when they want to have a great sports experience and they can't go to the stadium, is thinking, I'm going to use Fanzo. This is a really untapped segment of the ever-growing sports industry, and I think Fanzo has a really key part to play in the growth of all sport. And yeah, I really want to unlock those amazing, unforgettable sporting memories that, yeah, we have had so many of, but I want many future memories that, yeah, will form my life as a sports fan.
Is it a simple process? Do we just download Fanzo?
Yeah. As a fan, you just download, Fanzo. You can go to fanzo.com. We have over 6 million fans who use Fanzo every year, and I suspect that will greatly increase now that we're in the US. And then as a sports bar or as a sports rights holder, please go to Fanzo and check out our about page and tell you all about what we can do for you.
Seems like if you're not on the app, you're missing out.
That's exactly right, Doug.
Yeah. And I'm not associated with Fanzo. It's just a comment.
Thanks, Doug.
All right. So where are you going to be for the finals of the World Cup?
Hopefully at the MetLife. Okay. Hopefully at the MetLife. I'll be in the US most of the next couple of months and very much looking forward to feeling the energy of the tournament and speaking to fans in bars and in the stadium.
Just one issue that has come up as far as, you know, parking around MetLife Stadium and the ticket price of mass transit to get there, and that's not going to really deter the huge World Cup fans, is it?
Doug, it's a good point. It's a good point you make. Listen, in the lead up to every FIFA World Cup, there has been complications, some level of negative press. I won't go into the reasons why, like, you know, obviously Russia and the Qatar World Cup had its speed bumps. That's no less different for the US, and we know that there's been issues with certain fans coming into the country. Once the tournament starts and people start feeling that electricity and people start feeling the energy of the tournament, I very much hope that we'll be moving on to the really passionate phase. And listen, sport should be accessible to everybody. And if people can't afford to go to stadiums and get tickets, et cetera, you know what? There's a great experience to be had in sports bars up and down the US. And people will be putting on a great experience. And that will have the same level of energy and passion and social camaraderie that you can get in the stadium. And so that's actually exciting for us.
You mentioned the key word when it comes to soccer, football, however you refer to it, is accessibility. It's the great sport where they just roll the ball out, and you could be in Ethiopia, you could be in Australia, and you could be in the United States, and you can play a great game. That all you need is a ball, and you need a little bit of a field, and you're ready to go. So it's been great talking to you, Leo. This is exciting stuff now with Fanzo in North America. One last question. You say that France is going to win the World Cup. Say if they're in the finals, and what are you wearing in the stands?
Usually a France top, and then maybe a little bit of a France flag on the cheeks, and then just making a lot of noise.
Sounds good. Leo McMahose, who is the CEO and chairman and the co-founder of this app that you have to definitely try out, Fanzo, that is making a difference across the world now when it comes to the atmosphere of watching a game at the best sports bars and venues around the world. Leo, it's been a pleasure having you on Sports Jam. Continued success.
Thank you very much, Doug. Great to meet you.
You can see my entire Sports Jam interview with Fanzo's Leo McLahose on the WBGO YouTube channel. Sports Jam with Doug Doyle was recently honored by the New Jersey Society of Professional Journalists as the best podcast in the state. Thanks for listening to the WBGO Journal. I'm Doug Doyle. Join us next Saturday morning at a special time, 5 a.m., for a one-hour edition of the award-winning WBGO Journal. In the meantime, stay tuned to the world's greatest jazz and blues station, WBGO and WBGO.org.